Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey Connecting the Light. My guest today is Charlene Ryan, an intuitive life consultant and shamanic practitioner who took a one-year quest through Australia and has released a book recounting her experiences called Memoirs of a Mystic. And it is about her soul-expanding journey. She has devoted her life to spiritual study and practice, and we're going to talk to her about her journey and other subjects that she has an interest in. So welcome to the program, Charlene.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
Right. Now, it is not everyone that suddenly packs their bags and goes off for a one-year quest to Australia, and I gather that you obviously did a lot of travelling there, and this resulted in your book, Memoirs of a Mystic.
Yes.
But tell me first, just having told our listeners some of your skills, what is a shamanic practitioner?
What that is somebody who can assist others moving through and releasing old patterns. I believe, Mike, that by the time we're 8 years old, we have done some form of fragmenting or disassociating because we weren't equipped at the time to deal with whatever was coming at us. And the things that come at us is, I'm not valued, I'm not good enough, the universe is not a safe place, I'm not lovable, some form of that. And in order to survive, you learn to take on a role. And the typical, there's many roles, but typically four roles that are most prominent are the hero, the scapegoat, the invisible child, and the clown. So very, very young, we're all the expectations of that, or all the projections from our tribe or our family unit, are placed upon us. And ideally, wouldn't it be wonderful if we came into this planet fully understood and allowed reins to create and express and explore the universe? So when we are not, and most of us are not given that freedom, then there are parts that are unresolved. And depending on how traumatic that childhood was, depends on how deeply we're fragmented or disassociated, or we lose some part of ourselves that we had intended to have. And my work is, because I'm an intuitive, I can see things, symbols, places, persons, clearly, and also because I get gut feelings about things, or what I call my God self, or you could call that your inner self,
yes,
will speak to me and tell me things about that person that will assist them, because once something becomes into consciousness, then it's on its way out. And so my work is to look at the shadows, the energies, using all of my senses, smelling, tasting, touching, all of that, to assist them to safely release that.
Right. I notice you have described yourself as dealing with consciousness medicine. And
yes.
I believe that's part of your shamanic practices.
Yes.
What is that exactly?
Consciousness medicine has a lot to do with intuition. Some of the old paradigms that we're still practicing is, if you can't see it, you can't believe it. So most of us, if we can't touch and taste and smell and analyze and figure out, then it doesn't exist. And the intuition has taken a back seat for a long time. So the consciousness is to pay attention, to be aware, to notice your reality. And so often things are coming at us so quickly that we aren't conscious. Sometimes we go through life unconsciously or outside of our bodies. And so conscious medicine is, the person is the healer, Mike. I don't heal anybody. Everybody has to heal themselves. And so the consciousness is to trust their intuition, to give them tools to do that, and to know that they can heal themselves. It isn't somebody or something outside of them that will do it. When you hear about miracles or people make shifts, it's because that they're ready. They're ready to do that. They've tried everything else, perhaps. And the miracle they experience is the miracle of them aligning with their God self and awakening to who they really are at some level, if not for a lot of people, fully. And when people actually have near-death experiences and they go to the light, they come back so much more awake and aware that what I might say as God having the human experience in the person. Most of us think we're walking egos and we're wounded and victims and not loved and not valued and don't belong here. And yet if we are here, it was because the source, which I call my God self, wanted to have a Charlene experience. And that for me has been very colorful. It's both been interesting, challenging, painful, and rewarding.
Now, you mentioned then about people needing to know who they are. Mm-hmm. But does that also tie in with them needing to know what their purpose is in life?
Yes. I was having a conversation like this with a class that I do last night, and what I have come to know for me as an adult, I didn't know this for much of my life, but the prayer of my heart, if I knew that I were going to leave this planet a month from now, 3 months from now, what I have come to know for myself is what was the calling of my heart, what was my real purpose for coming here. And I always thought it was a job. It was a craft. It was, you know, something I taught or said or did. But I realized that the calling for me is to awaken to who I really am. So often we believe our stories. And if our stories have been challenging, we haven't been successful in love relationships or couldn't find that right job or we've had health issues, we begin to believe that's who we are. And so part of my work is to help people find the joy in the fact that they're here and to really go deeply beyond materialism, beyond that perfect job and that perfect relationship. What do you really want for yourself? And so I think that's what our purpose is. It's not about a doingness, Mike. I think it's about a beingness and how do I want to be in the world? And understanding why you want to be that. If you want to be very wealthy, the law of attraction will just work so naturally for you. It's almost like you don't have to do anything about it because you recognize that giving was the most important thing to you, and so money came to you, and what joy and delight that you could experience by giving to those who did not come in with the belief that law of attraction was so profoundly strong inside you.
Yes,
so as far as careers, you know, the doingness, I think when we're very young, I think by the time we're 8 years old, and if, lots of times I ask people to look at that, what were you doing? What kinds of things did you play with? Did you like to be alone? Did you like to be out in nature? Were you talking as you were doing things? So were you a person who really wanted to invent things, and so you were always putting your tinker toys together? So it's that sense of working with things, tactile or talking. I talked a lot when I was little. I talked to my dolls and to angels. So is the doingness, I think we know, as for the job description, well, job descriptions change so fast as our technology and our world changes that our needs for specific titles is being diminished because those titles change every 5 minutes.
Yes. Now, I don't know whether you believe in the idea that people are born with a predestined life plan, although there is an element of free will here.
Yes.
But if that were the case, would you expect to see in a child's growth and development perhaps a leaning towards particular things that they probably subconsciously wanted to do anyway.
Yes, yes. I have been a person of interest in astrology since I was 16. Mm-hmm. And it just came to me. I didn't go looking for it. And so how I look at astrology is it's our contractual agreement. It's something that we wanted to experience. And the sun sign is what we have come to learn how to do. And what we call the ascendant, where the sun sets, so to speak, that's our personality. That's the mask we put on to the world for a little bit of a safety net. That's what feels comfortable as we learn to develop the sun. And then, of course, there's a whole lot of other aspects to the chart. And depending on what particular house is highlighted, where the sun is, where some of the major planets are, really skews somebody towards politics or towards counseling. Or my whole chart, Mike, is just loaded with everything that is connected to shamanism, near-death experiences, being intuitive, being a counselor, Native American connection. I mean, it's all through my chart. But yes, as a young girl, I didn't become a counselor right away. My first career was as a hairdresser, and people told me their stories all the time.
Yes.
So sometimes you have to go through the back door.
Right,
so
yes.
I think astrology, but let me emphasize this, it doesn't happen to you. Because of being able to go in, and I trust my intuition, a long time ago, I was invited through meditation, seeing myself in a circle, and there were 12 beings around me. And I call those aspects of myself the council, my council.
Yeah. Yes.
And I liken them to 12 disciplines or 12 astrology houses or 12 disciples, because each of the disciples that walk with Jesus represent one of those houses. And so I, not in form, but with those 12 disciplines or disciples or council, I chose what I wanted to experience. And then, of course, I came in and forgot, because if I knew what I had planned out, why come? Why bother? So it becomes the great mystery of life. And my job is to discover who I am along the way and to use every tool, but not to give the power to the tool, because we always have free choice in, I don't want to do that, and how we're going to react to something. So it's just a blueprint. It's a wonderful blueprint, but we can create it in any form that we want. I think we still do have free will. But the major gist of it all is that I wasn't supposed to come in to be a doctor or a scientist or a jet flighter. So I think that part is pretty clear. If you're finding a person who has been doing astrology for a long time and that you respect them, I would highly recommend having that done for people as a signpost, as a guide along the way, and help them to understand that there were certain periods in their life that were real challenging. And were they a victim, or had they consciously chosen to have that experience, and then the delight of coming through it?
So when you talk in terms of have people chosen a certain experience, of course that may not necessarily be something that they would be delighted to experience. It may be far from it. So do you get people that seem to have problems with what they find are on their pathway, things like that, that they don't particularly like?
Yes, yes, yes. Many years ago, I had met my first Australian woman who was doing conflict resolution in a prison in the area that I live in, Washington. And she saw me at a conference. I was doing a talk and came to me, and we had tea later. And she invited me to do conflict resolution in this medium prison for men, medium security prison. And I went, that's like the last thing on earth I want to do.
Yeah.
But I ended up dreaming about it, and my God self wanted me to do it. And at that time, my 12th house, which is like prisons or mental institutions, was highlighted by a transiting planet. And so I write about this in my book. And so I went in and did the work several times a month. We would go in, several times a year. And a person, a particular person approached me, and I ended up getting involved in their life and helped them to be released from prison. And it was a Native American man who felt that they were discriminating against him. And so I helped him. And one of the things when I helped him, then I had to stop doing conflict resolution, went in and read his file. And I was just, my heart was deeply saddened about the violence that was bestowed upon him at such a young age, like 2, 3. And in talking to him, I went, how does someone survive this? And one time he said to me, he said, I think I did pretty good with the hand that was dealt me. And, you know, even though he was in prison, even though he was an alcoholic and an addict before he went into prison, you know, he came out and reunited and not educated, ended up with a job that, had he not spent all that time in prison, had not been older, he might have had a better job. But that whole prison experience was what really was in his chart, was in his destiny. Can we find the source in the darkest of dark places? And can we find our own light, our own spark, our own love, even if we wouldn't call it love, that survival, that trying to understand? And for the person I helped, it was to be reunited with his family. Family meant a lot to him.
Yes.
So, and I, because of working in prison and because of doing drug and alcohol work on Indian reservations, that's the kind of job you don't see. Everybody's happy and everything's glorious. You see lives that are challenged, really challenged, of own doing, but also out of patterns and then also out of commitment to experience something.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing the prison work, I met an elder, a Native American man, who had 30 years prior killed his wife. He was drunk and he was jealous and he killed her. And in prison, he found himself back into his ways, his traditional Native American ways. And he was the first Native American to get a sweat lodge into this particular prison. And so any Native American that came in, he would teach them. And he helped a lot of people. And my time, I spent a couple years doing that, and my time was complete, because I needed to go off in another direction. And I remember him, seeing him outside of prison, knowing he was going to come for parole, but was kind of surprised when I saw him. And he was sitting on a bench downtown in Seattle with a bag in his hand. And traditionally, people have bags, and then there's some alcohol in it, a beer or something. And yeah. I went to go across the street. I wanted to avoid him, and he called me back. And he said, you thought I had alcohol in here. And he said, how is it that you, of all people, you made your mental judgment and didn't use your intuitive knowing to know? And he pulled it out, and it was a can of Pepsi. And so he said to me, he was surprised as well as I was embarrassed about making that judgment without going into my inner guidance. And he said that he had not relapsed, but that he needed to find his way back into prison. Now, here's a man in his 80s, because he said, my work has always been there, and I'm going to find a way back, because I, in prison, there's all of his audience. Otherwise, he'd have to go looking for the audience, and you know, he was old. So, yes, there are people that it looks like it's the worst thing in the world, but then they discover themselves in that terrible place. What I say terrible to me, I'm grateful that I have not had to walk some of the paths of the people I have been with.
Right, yes. But it is interesting to think that his life was intentionally directed so that he could get involved with these prisoners. And because he felt at home doing that, as you've just commented, he, even when he was outside, he still wanted to be in.
Yes. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense because, you know, to go out on the streets, many people are still drinking. And it's hard to teach somebody who's an alcoholic or still using because it shifts the energy in the mind and all of that. But for anybody who imprisons themselves in any way, Mike, it's a golden opportunity to go deeper because you don't have the exterior. It's very simple in prison. You do A, B, and C, and if you follow A, B, and C, then you can be on good behavior and have time to go to the libraries to research and study. And they had a golden nugget with him because he knew the traditions. And the Native American, the older ways that were practiced were amazing. They were awake. They were aware. They honored everything, and they all knew that they were part of what we might call the unified field. They were part of the collective, and that when you do one thing to one part of the collective, you affect the whole collective. And right now, the few are doing a lot of destruction in this collective, this unified field theory, and that's purposeful too, even though it sounds bizarre for me to say that. But tracing back over history, the Hopis talked about we're in the fourth world and that the worlds prior, there was always disruption on the Mother Earth, that she did do her shifts and volcanic eruptions and tsunamis as she was stretching and growing. And that perhaps it was that the Mayans or some of the civilizations that disappeared went through parallel universes or other realities. You know, there's so much we don't know, but if we go back and study the ancient ones, they talk about UFOs. They talk about beings from other planets teaching and helping us evolve, and they always talk about how when one birthing of a new civilization, a new unified field is birthing itself, then the old one gets real corrupt and it collapses. But at the same time, the phoenix is coming into the new world.
Yes, so, hence, well, as you said, we're in a period of transformation for that very reason.
Yes, yeah. And yet you watch television, and if I see another 2012, I'm going to throw something at the TV because it's all doom and gloom, the end of the world. And if you, it's so easy to get people, herd them in if you make them afraid. And so everything is just fear-based. I mean, there's hardly, I mean, every show is a detective show. Every show is a killing. They report all the bad news. And so people are fear-based, and when you're fear-based, then that becomes very heaviness in the body, dense in the body, and, you know, that expression, a lightened being or an enlightened being. Well, what that simply means is that you take the life that you were given, and instead of believing the things that happened to you, you look at what is the gift out of what has happened. What did I do with this? And forgive it. Forgiveness is the first step before one can love. You can't hold love and fear in the same place. And that's part of my work, is to help people to find ways within them that they can make sense out of the tragedies that they agreed to have, and to find the love out of that. And when there is love in the body, we lighten up. Our DNA shifts. Our frequency changes. And for a lot of us, our frequency, as it is with Mother Earth, is getting higher. Like, I think a normal Royal Rife, who created the Rife machine, measured frequency for diseases. And at the time, he measured and Rife was English, measured that 50 megahertz was the normal vibration of the day for a healthy person, and that some forms of cancer resonate 20 to 30, depending the severity. And so people have taken off on that, like people like Greg Braden talking about, I believe he says that Mother Earth is resonating at 7.5 megahertz, and it's going to move to zero. And when zero happens, somewhere in the vicinity of Aquarius, which is 2012 or thereabouts, that we will move to zero point, and that will be birthing us into Aquarius.
Right.
And Aquarius is all about the unified field theory. It's about love. It's about humanitarianism. It's about that every component, every piece of the puzzle is as important as the other. And there's no more power down. It's power through.
Hmm.
It's love through.
Yes, indeed. And I'm absolutely in agreement with you regarding 2012 and zero point. But as you rightly pointed out a little earlier, some people hear about the Mayan prophecies up to 2012 and they don't realize that that isn't meant to be the end of everything, purely the end of this cycle.
Yes, exactly, exactly. But they don't tell you the whole thing because a lot of organizations, and I don't want to knock anything, so let me say this. When I was doing drug and alcohol work, because I was trying to save everybody, I thought that was my job to save, and quickly found out, no, it wasn't about saving. But people would, the greatest next organization they could join was one of recovery, and the 12-step program, and AA and NA, and how wonderful, because where we are, we want to bloom the next logical step up from where we are. We can't make quantum leaps, maybe some can, from alcoholism to enlightenment. I'm allowing for the fact that that can happen. But we have to take gradual steps. And that's what I love about the universe, is that we've been in Pisces, and the Pisces has been all about believing and discovering and who is God and asking all those questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? What is my purpose? And now as we move into Aquarius, it's that knowingness, knowing that God is within me having this human experience. Why? Why not? You know, if I were God, why not? And that you cannot kill source, you cannot kill energy, and that it's like a snake, it's a shedding of the skin so that we can be born into the most next delicious idea we can come up with.
Right. Now, somewhere along the line, you mentioned about past lives. Is that something you can use in your work to help people?
Yes, absolutely. But let me say, Mike, I don't embrace anything linear like that past life in the 1800s. Because I think because of the unified field theory, because of what quantum physics, which is catching up with metaphysics, I think they've got a nice marriage going right now, and all the great mystics and all the great teachers taught us that everything is in the now. And
yes.
So because we space is curved, it's not one line, I think all experiences that God within me wanted to have could happen all simultaneously, and sometimes through past life regressions, we could tap in to something that is happening simultaneously that we sense, but yet we don't know what it is, and it's difficult to move forward now. So we go into what we call a past life to assist in the present time. I think we are so much more. I love that quantum physics talks about, in fact, Richard Bach in a book called One talked about parallel universes and that he knew and experienced Leslie, his wife, in different ways in these parallel universes, and now quantum physics says that. So let's say I'm having the worst life in the world, whatever that could be. Well, it's delicious to know for me that I'm not a victim, that there is some parallel universe that I'm having where everything is perfect. I'm healthy, I'm happy. And part of my shamanic work, if I'm guided to do so, Mike, it is to look for that parallel universe and then to bring the energy of that into present time and what I call install into the person. Now, again, if they're not going to believe this is possible, then I can't make something happen. You know, and so I tried to talk about quantum physics. Here's what science is saying. I'm not making this up. You know, if this is too hard for you to believe, here's a direction to go to see what science has to say. Or here's a direction to go to see what other people might say about the possibility that there really is a parallel universe, and I'm happy in that one, and that me in that parallel universe could assist the me that's difficult, having difficulty now.
Right.
So it's just so much out there. But again, those in power, and that's all perfect too. I'm not making any criticism. It's challenging. But those that are wanting to hold the old paradigm, very, very strongly, and the more they're losing hold of it, the more corruption you see, the more craziness you see.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, all over the world, people like you are doing radio shows. You do your work to contribute and say, well, that's okay to look at that side of the coin, but how about looking at the other side?
Indeed,
and
yes.
Let them know.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your book, Memoirs of a Mystic.
Okay.
Tell our listeners how important Annie, the Aboriginal, was to that end.
I love, first of all, I love the Australians. I had amazing time with them, and I love the Aboriginals. They're amazing beings. And so let me say that I wasn't setting out to write a book. That was not my intention. It was a profound calling that for close to a year would not let me go. And didn't know a soul when I did go. And it was probably the biggest, bravest thing I ever did in my life. So unlike anything that I might have done before. And so I guess when I look back, I felt like I had a level of relationship with my God self that I had outgrown. And when I look back, I think I was trying to test that. Here I leave the country, paid off all my bills, had a round-trip ticket and $150 to my name, and no bank accounts back home to tap into. No mommy, no daddy, no husband that could bail me out. And I had to do it. I knew that I could not leave this planet, whenever that's to come, without following this quest. And it was the greatest thing I ever did because it awakened all kinds of, it freed me up in ways that I couldn't have imagined. And one of the gifts of that was that because of my Native American background, spending over 20 years with different tribes, that ended up being a natural segue, and also alcoholism, because with the Aboriginals, petrol sniffing and maybe today there's meth labs that wasn't so much in then, but five-year-old kids were petrol sniffing and blowing out their brains, and not gun-wise, but with the chemicals. And so I was invited to do a radio show and talk about that. Well, there's a college an Aboriginal college, and so they heard about me and they came down literally out of the hills to talk about the Native Americans, which just kept opening doors. I mean, I didn't go looking for anything. I just surrendered. And they are amazing. Talk about people who can shapeshift. Talk about people who know this is a dream. This is a massive computer-generated dream, and that we never have left the source. And so they would play with the dream.
Yes.
They would go in and out of their own parallel lives. They would go in and out of dimensions. And we thought they were weird. And they just celebrated life with Mother Earth, and had the same approach to when you kill an animal, you talk to the animal and you say to the kangaroo, you say, to the wallaby, you say to the fish, thank you for providing my sustenance so I can walk this human journey. Mm. And, of course, all of that is very frightening, and yet now we're turning to those cultures for their how they work with herbs and how they survived and how do you do the dreaming, you know, for their intuition and knowingness. And they are such a pure culture. They've been around for over 60,000 years. We yes. found, when I was there, they found Aboriginal bones, pure Aboriginals, 60,000 years old. So, right. And they're playful, loving, kind people, and except in the cities when they've become alcoholic or skeptical or protective, or, you know, us white people aren't so safe to be with.
Right.
So I just feel, it was just the biggest blessing I gave to myself was to go back to Lemuria, to go back to the ancient ones, and to know that they're still alive and some of them still hold that knowingness.
Right.
And not that they shared it with me, but it just things came telepathically for me. The understanding came. And that's how they would teach me without words, Mike, because to give me words would have not been safe. But if my mind could receive telepathic information, then they knew that they knew I had a good heart, but that I would do things in a good way about it.
Right. So how did the Aboriginal woman named Annie help you in particular?
Oh, I just loved her. A couple things that I'll share with her, share about her. She reminded me that I had an old pattern of judging a book by its cover.
Yes.
And Annie is as black as black as black could be, and I'm as white can be. And so what she awakened in me is my shadow side. She would talk about that I was afraid of my power, that I gave my power away, that I didn't trust my intuition, that I didn't listen with trust. And she said, in fact, when I first met her, she said to me, she was weaving a basket, which I have today, and trying to teach me, and I was not interested in weaving, and she said to me, why are you here? I'm speaking English. Hers was kind of broken English. Yes. She'd go, why are you here? And I said, Annie, I don't know why I'm here. She said, I sung you here. So she talked about song lines, about intuition, about when you're awake, you vibrate and resonate with everything, and every foot that you take on Mother Earth is like a musical instrument. And then you begin to sing that. And so you always know your way forward and backwards and sideways. And so she said that I had come to her in a vision, in her dream time, and that she was to be with me. Not that she saw my face specifically, but that a white woman was coming. And so she could choose to sing the song, which is to create the vibration. And remember I said earlier there was a calling. I didn't know why. Well, she was calling me because her source told her. She was a medicine woman and told her that I was coming. And because, she didn't say this, but because we are all part of that unified field theory, then my job was to pay attention and not have a logical reason why I was going down under or people I was going to meet. That's pretty safe.
Mm.
So that was one of the teachings. Another one, we were sitting very hot, sitting on the ground. She put a blanket out, and she was weaving and didn't talk a lot. She spoke to me telepathically. But one time I got up, I was stretched because my bum was getting tired from sitting so long. And I was putting my arms out, and I was looking, and I could just feel the energy. Oh, how wonderful it felt not to feel all the cell towers and the fast pace of the world. And I actually found myself trailing out into that energy. And then the back of my knees, it felt like she hit me and I landed on my knees. And she laughed and laughed, and I said, what happened? Did you hit me? She said, only with my mind. And I said, why did you do that? And she said, oh, you go too far into the future. You stay here right now. Everything's happening now. If you go out there too far into the future, you miss everything good here. You miss what Spirit wants you to know here. And I said, but Annie, you were just telling me to, you know, open up more to my intuition. She said, timing. Timing. Nobody asks you to go there now. You stay here. So she would pull little antics on me. Or if people would come down or come to this little area from the reservation, we're trying to have her resolve something, she would just turn her head and give them a look. And the power of that, they would spin on their wheels and turn away. And I went, what is, do the Aboriginals speak in a hidden language? And I asked her about that. And she said, and these are my words, Mike, she said, 90% of what we say to one another has no words. Only lips flap with 10%. She said, so whether we acknowledge it or not, we speak to each other by gestures, by eye movement, by energy. And then she taught me about the animals, which I have come to know at home. How is it that my cat knows his name is Charlie? And she said, pictures. We give pictures to the animals, and they can understand those pictures. So she also taught me a lot of things like I learned from the Native Americans, is that we have to look with our third eye, so to speak, and not to assume that everything I see with my human eye is correct. And so over the years, also what she taught me is to teach myself to get the hair up in the back of my neck, or chills, or a gut feeling, to honor all that, because that's like what the cat does. That's what the buffalo does. That's what the kangaroo does. And then she said, do I have animals? And I said, I have two cats. And she said, how is it that dogs and cats know their masters are coming home hours before they come, and they're waiting? And my cats always wait at the top of the steps. It's not like I call them up. So in my book, I talk about the shadows, that there's seven shadows that we might align with the chakras.
Yes.
And that how the first one, and I'm not going to go through them all. If people want to read my book, that's good. But the first one that was the most significant one is the first chakra, which is at the base of the spine, is all about my tribal connection. It's my contractual agreement to come and be born to this man and this woman, and then whatever their parents and cousins and aunts and uncles, and that I chose to be a white, German, Irish woman and born in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, was all part of my specific blueprint. So that becomes my tribe. And then everything ancestrally, at least seven generations back on both sides, that I would be impacted by that, and that it writes itself on my DNA.
Yes.
And that that each generation, like what she said is that I stood on the bones of my ancestors. I stood on the bones of their suffering, their accomplishments, that had I not been standing on their bones, then I would be back creating the bones. And so each generation, because of what they went through, like my parents went through the Depression and war, the World War II, and so they survived that. And how did they survive that? And what did they teach me? What did they embed in me? But that there would come a time when I had to free myself from the story, the poverty, it's awful and terrible, and the world isn't safe, and looking at things from a negative, limiting view, and I'm a victim, and all that kind of stuff. And so she said that each of us in different ways, whether it's a profound relationship that we were so deeply enmeshed in and loved in that would cause that wake up, or a job or a health issue, some kind of calling happens repeatedly in our lives to invite us to look at with gratitude, even if your father was an alcoholic and beat you,
yes,
to look on the fact that you stand on his bones and can make different choices. And that going through that chakra, that first shadow, was that I left my tribe. I left the United States. I left my family system. I left belief systems behind. And I came to Australia, which was the, you know, the next best step for me, because it would have been too difficult to go to a country where I didn't speak the language and then try to be doing a walkabout. So I went to Australia, and I couldn't rely on things that I saw. Although there were some familiarities, it is different. It is a different culture, and they came up out of a civilization where it was developed by prisoners that were let loose. And so their story, so I stood in another story. You know, but I had to heal my own story and to forgive my tribe and to be grateful for my tribe. And the greatest gift I could give my tribe is to not continue to carry the story with sorrow and hatred in my heart or unforgiveness or victimization, but to change that story with gratitude and thank you.
Right. So, I'm going to have to stop you there in as much, Charlene, that we are coming to the last 5 minutes of the program. And I do want to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners where they can buy your book. So perhaps you would tell them and give them your website for reference.
Yes. Well, my website is, of course, the www. And it's Charlene Ryan, CharleneRyan.com. You can buy the book there, or Amazon and Barnes & Noble is another place. I'm sure it's cheap books, wherever. It's pretty much out there for wherever they want to buy it. And all of my services, everything that I'm involved in, my blogs, are all at my website.
Right. Now, you do invite people to work with you by phone.
Yes.
Presumably, you also invite them to email you to make arrangements. I mean, do you want to give your email address out?
Yes. It's Charlene Ryan, again, the same spelling, and then the number 2 after it. Charlene Ryan 2 at comcast.net. And if they go to my website, that's the place where the email comes up automatically, and then you would contact me that way.
All right, lovely. Now, I notice you have a monthly email newsletter. Is that free to people who want it?
It is. I no longer do that, Mike. I now do a blog, but every Sacred Journal, which was my monthly newsletter, is there. It will say radio show archives, because I used to do a radio and a television show. And then people like Bruce Lipton, people I have interviewed, are there. And then all of my past newsletters. And to date, I do a blog. And when you go to my website, you'll see a bar across the top, and it says blog. You click on that. You can see all current blogs. And if people want to receive a blog, and I do them periodically. I don't do them monthly.
Right.
Then they become a follower, and to become a follower is free. It just simply means an email comes every month, every time I do a blog.
Right. Can I just say, out of interest, when you were talking about the North American Indians, just by chance recently I came across a photocopy of a book that was first published in 1937 called The Gospel of the Red Man, an Indian Bible, by Ernest Thompson Seton. And I've browsed through it, and you've touched upon the fact as to how spiritual they are. And yet, when you read stories about them from a historical point of view, you would get the impression that they were just wild, free spirits, whereas in fact they were highly, highly spiritual people.
And if people studied the Cherokee, specifically here in the United States, they were amazing people. And one, I can't remember the details of all this, Mike, because there's a lot of stories in my head. But the Cherokee were very peaceful people, brilliant people, and they created an alphabet that's far superior to ours. And they were highly involved in our Constitution, the wording of that. And so what we don't say about them is amazing contributions that they have given to life. Their profound ability to speak with all aspects of spirit. And we called them savage, but they were simply innocent. Because they had been told that both countries, Aboriginals and here, they were told that the white man was coming. And so because they had such good, open, loving hearts, they probably their downfall was their innocence.
Yes.
You know, and then giving them alcohol and they're pure. When you have spirit in you, you don't need alcohol, that kind of spirit.
Right. I'm going to have to thank you here, Charlene, for coming on to the program, because I need a couple of minutes to announce next week's guest. It's been terrific speaking with you. You're certainly very, very well informed on all your various subjects, and it's proved to be very interesting. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael.
You're very welcome. Now, friends, next week I have the return of Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, who's been on my program a couple of times, one of my favorite guests, I must admit. He's a professional psychic, a counselor, coach, medical, intuitive, author. He's got lots of strings to his bow. And this year he's opened a healing center. So he'd like to come on next week and talk about that. And we will, of course, touch upon his other subjects as well. So I know that will be, again, another very interesting guest. So I have to thank you all for being with me today. I'm sure you found it extremely enjoyable. And Charlene Ryan is certainly an excellent speaker. So thank you very much for being with me. I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.